Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanihim Began Eden. Amen.
Daf Yud Dalid.
Today's daf is being studied Lahatzlacha fi Yaakov ben Mazal and Esther bat Mazal, that she should find a husband soon. Today's daf is being studied Le'ilu Nishmat Abraham ben Esther. Ruach Hashem Tenehenu Began Eden. Today's daf is also being learned for Ashelema Moshe ben Victoria. Ena Refanado Betoch Shar Chole Yisrael. We are starting on the bottom of Yud Gimel Amud Sheni. We begin the study of the 18 Gezerot that students of Hillel and Shammai made in the attic of Hananiah ben Chizkiah ben Garon. As we mentioned in yesterday's daf, we discussed 10 of these enactments regarding the laws of Terumah. The first one being that if somebody eats food that is Tameh, either he eats food that is a Rishon Letum'ah or food that is a Sheni Letum'ah, it renders the person who eats it Tameh. It'll make him a Sheni. Now, by making the person a Sheni, that'll mean if he comes in contact with Terumah, it'll make the Terumah a Shilishi. Now, that's a Chidush only because by eating a level of Rishon Netum'ah, let's say, can only Metameh from the Torah Ochlim Umashkim. A Rishon can only Metameh foodstuff. Rishon does not have the ability to metameh a person from the Torah. So the chidush of this first enactment was that even though it's a Rishon, this food is Rishon level of Tum'ah, and biblically it cannot metameh the person. However, the rabbis came along and said if he eats a Rishon, or he eats food that's a Sheni l'Tum'ah, it'll make the person himself a Sheni, and therefore if he touches Terumah, it'll make the Terumah pasul. As we learned, the word pasul means that it makes Terumah a shilishi, because once Terumah reaches a shilishi, it cannot go any further. If the word would have been tameh, that means it would make it a sheni. If Terumah becomes a sheni, it has the ability to go further and make more Terumah a shilishi. So pasul always means that it takes it to its final level, wherever it may be. In Terumah, it is a shilishi. So again, that is the first enactment. So the Gemara says, who's the opinion of that? And we start two lines from the bottom. Man Tana, who's the opinion that says, ha'ochel, ochel rishon, if somebody eats food that is a rishon, va'ochel, ochel sheni, or if a person eats food that is a sheni, mifsal pasle, it has the ability to make the eater a sheni, therefore being able to be posel terumah, meaning making terumah a shelishi, temuye lo metamu, but does not have the ability to be metameh, meaning as opposed to saying if a person ate a rishon, if we would say it makes the eater a Rishon, then it has the ability to be metameh, because it would make Terumah a Sheni, and then that Terumah could make other Terumah a Shilishi. That would say Tameh. But this opinion says, no, it's Pasul. It makes the eater a Sheni, no matter what he eats. If he eats Rishon level food, Sheni level food, the eater always becomes a Sheni, hence being able to be Posel Terumah at the Shilishi level. Who's the opinion that says that? The Gemara says, Amar Rabba Bar Bar Hana, Rabbi Yoshua, the Tana Rabbi Yoshua. Nitnan, because we have a machloket. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Ha'ochel, Ochel Rishon, Rishon. If you eat food that is on the Rishon level, Rabbi Eliezer says, you become what you eat. You become a Rishon. Ve'ochel ochel sheni, and if he eats ochel food that's on the sheni level, sheni, he becomes a sheni. Again, the rule of Rabbi Eliezer, we can to remember it, you could say, according to him, you are what you eat. If you eat a Rishon, you're a Rishon. If you eat a Sheni, the fellow becomes a Sheni. Okel Shelishi, if he eats food that is a Shelishi, Shelishi, then he will become a Shelishi. Rabbi Yoshua Omer, Rabbi Yoshua says no. Ha'okel Okel Rishon, ve'okel Sheni, Sheni. Rabbi Yoshua's rule is also easy to remember. He says no matter what you eat, you always become a sheni. If the food is a rishon, you become a sheni. If the food is a sheni, you become a sheni. So that's the mahlok. So obviously, according to Rabbi Eliezer, that says if you ate food that's a rishon, you become a rishon, that has the ability to be metameh. Meaning it'll make terumah a sheni. The rishon, if the fellow's a rishon. Now he touches terumah, that's a sheni. That terumah, if it touches more terumah, it'll make it a shenishi. That's tameh. But the Gezerot said that if a person eats things that are tameh, it's posel. That can only fit according to the Yoshua. That says, no matter what you eat, a rishon or a sheni, it makes you a sheni, hence making terumah a shenishi. That means posel. The last case of the Yoshua is shenishi. If a person ate food on the shirishi level of tumah, sheni lakodesh, it becomes, the fellow becomes, the eater becomes a sheni regarding kodesh, meaning korbanot, ve'en sheni litrumah, but he does not become a sheni regarding terumah. What does this mean? The Gemara says one more line and then we'll explain it. Beholin shenasu al taharat teruma. We're talking about over here a case where a person is eating holin. Holin means regular food, non-sanctified food. The food we eat, for example, today is holin. It's not kodesh, it's not teruma. It's nothing holy about it. It's regular food. That's called holin. But in the olden days, there were many Pirushim, we call them, people that were mahmir on themselves, stringent on themselves, that they would eat their hulin on the level as if they were eating terumah. Meaning they would safeguard their hulin as if they were safeguarding terumah. And they treated it on a very, very high level. And therefore whatever would render terumah pasul, that's the way they would look at their hulin. They would treat it as terumah. And therefore their hulin, those specific people, was able to reach the level of a shenishi. Because that's what terumah can reach. So therefore, if sheni foods touch their hulin, they would say, oh, now it's a shenishi. And therefore, they wouldn't eat it, etc. It would be considered, for them, not fit. Now let's say a person would eat that shilishi food. According to the Yoshua, it doesn't do anything to the person regarding terumah. Shilishi does not make the fellow a sheni and thereby making him allowed to make terumah a shilishi. Yes, according to the Yoshua, if you ate a Rishon, you become a Sheni. If you ate a Sheni, you become a Sheni. But if you ate a Shilishi, it does not have any bearings to the fellow who's eating it by Terumah, to affect Terumah. But he says it has bearings on the eater regarding his contact with Kodesh. Kodesh is a higher level. Kodesh is Korbanot. Now, the rule is like this. If a person is treating his food, his chodim, with the stringencies of terumah, it's not considered as if he watched it and protected the food for the stringencies of Kodesh. Because the stringencies of Kodesh are stricter. Kodesh is able to reach a level of revi'i l'tumah, the fourth level of tumah. And therefore, we assume, you were watching your chodim for terumah, but you weren't watching it for Kodesh. So for Kodesh level, it's considered it was not watched at all. Therefore, in regards to Kodesh, this Hulin that's on a level 3, the Rabbi Yoshua says, we consider it making the eater a sheni in order to be metameh kodesh, meaning making kodesh a shlishi, and thereby making more kodesh a ribi'i, which means when you eat hulin that was eaten with the stringencies of terumah, for terumah it doesn't make the eater anything. The eater becomes pure regarding terumah because it's a shlishi level. However, regarding kodesh, since he was not watching it on that stringent level as if it was kodesh, there we assume that the fellow is a sheni. We're strict. We make the guy a sheni, and therefore has the ability to make kodesh tameh. Kodesh can become a sheni shi, and the more kodesh can become a ribi'i. In any event, we see that the author of the shita that says if one eats foodstuffs that's a rishon or a sheni becomes a sheni, that is Rabbi Yoshua. So comes the Gemara and says, and the Gemara says, Ochel Ochel Rishon Ve'ochel Ochel Sheni Maitama Gazru Berabbanan Tuma. What's the reason why the rabbis were Gozer Tuma in such a case? Because let's remind ourselves, from the Torah, a Rishon cannot Metame Adam, and certainly a Sheni cannot Metame Adam. As we learned, a Rishon from the Torah level can only metameh ochlim u'mashkim, more foodstuff. So here the rabbis made a gezerah that a Rishon can metameh the guy. Now the Gemara says, why? Why did the rabbis do such a thing? So the Gemara says, Dizimnin de'achil ochlin teme'in, v'shakil mashkin de'truma, v'shadeh lepumeh, Upasilehu. Because we're concerned about the following case. The zimnin means sometimes. The achil ochlin teme'in. Let's say you have over here a kohen. And he's eating cholin. Cholin is regular foods. A kohen is allowed to eat regular foods. The chedush of a kohen is he's even allowed to eat terumah. But regular foods he's allowed to eat. And the cholin that he eats does not have to be pure. The chulin that the kohen eats is even could be tameh. There's no din that chulin has to be tahor. Even chulin that's tameh is edible. Terumah that's tameh is not edible. But chulin that's tameh is viable. Kohen can eat it. It's not a problem. So what can happen? A kohen can be eating, let's say, his regular food. He's eating, let's say, bread. He's eating his bread. It's chulin bread, not terumah bread. He's eating it. And it's tameh. No problem, he's eating it. What's very possible to happen? Let's say he has wine. And that wine that he has is terumah wine. Now what happens when a person eats? He drinks. So we're concerned that if he's going to start drinking this wine while he has that tameh chulin bread in his mouth, the wine is going to touch the bread in his mouth. The bread, let's say, is on a sheni level. It could make the wine of terumah a shlishi. We're concerned about that case not happening. We don't want that case to happen, because it's very quite possible that it could happen. So the rabbis made the enactment that said, when you eat food, when you eat that bread, for example, the second you eat that bread, they put a tumah on the person. You are now a sheni. Now, there'll never be a chance for him to put that terumah in his mouth, because he can't even touch the terumah now. Because if he touches the terumah, it becomes a shlishi. So by making that enactment, they actually put a fence so the kohen will never come to have tameh food in his mouth with terumah. Because if that happens, it'll make the terumah pasul. You're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to make terumah pasul. This terumah was kasher. This terumah was tahor. Now you're going to take the wine, put it in your mouth, going to touch the bread that's tameh, becomes a shlishi. So how do they ward off that case so you'll never put that terumah in your mouth? They said, once you eat that bread, let's say that's a sheni, you are a sheni. Once the guy's a sheni, he can't touch the wine anymore, because the wine will become a shlishi. So finished. So therefore, it's in order that they don't come to eat those two things together. Comes again, Gemara says, the next enactment, Mashkin Timein. The next enactment was that if a person drank beverages that were Tameh, for example, the beverage was either a Rishon or the beverage was a Sheni, it makes the drinker a Sheni. And then if he touches Terumah, it makes Terumah a Shilishi. So the Gemara wants to understand, what's the rationale behind that Gezerah? My Ta'ama Gazru Be'Rabbanan. What's the reason why the rabbis made such an enactment? Gazru Ba Tum'ah. Why did they make Tum'ah in such a case? Dizimnin Deshata Mashkin Teme'in. Because we're concerned that maybe the Kohen will be drinking sometimes Mashkin that are Teme'in. That's okay, that's his Cholin. He has wine, regular wine, Cholin wine. That's Tameh. He's allowed to drink it. And what are we worried? V'shakil ochlin de truma v'shadil lepumeh. We're worried that he might take bread, let's say, of teruma, and put it in his mouth while he has the mashkim teme'in in his mouth. What's going to happen to that bread now? That bread is going to touch the tameh wine that's in his mouth, and that teruma is now going to become a shirishi and be pasul. Upasidehu. So therefore, how do they ward that case off? So what they did is they said, if you drink mashkim teme'im, automatically the drinker becomes a sheni. Therefore, he'll never touch the bread. It'll never get to his mouth. He won't even touch it, because once they make him a sheni, he knows that that bread of terumah is off limits. Because he himself is a sheni, so they'll never collide in his mouth together. So the Gemara asks, Haynu hach. The first two enactments that we discussed basically are a gezerah for the same thing. Which means, the reason why we said, if a person eats foodstuffs that already shown a sheni, the fellow becomes a sheni. This is why, because we want to make sure that the Kohen does not eat both food and terumah, and that's tahor and tameh, and they're going to collide in his mouth and touch and make a tameh. And the reason why we don't allow him to eat mashkin that's teme'in, and if he drank mashkin that's teme'in, it's going to make him a sheni. Why? Because we don't want him to also drink mashkin teme'in with terumah in his mouth, so they collide and become tameh. It's the same gezerah. It's the same story. It's trying to protect the same scenario. What do you need? Two cases. So the Gemara says, Ma'u de tema, I would have thought, Hai shchichi v'hai lo shchichi. One is prevalent, one is not prevalent. Kamash malan. Let's analyze ourselves. When a person is eating, it is prevalent for him to drink. A person has food in his mouth. It's quite common that while you have the food in your mouth, at the same time, you'll drink. So therefore, the first gezerah is very prevalent. That we're worried that a person is going to be eating, let's say, cholin foods that are tameh, they'll be in his mouth, and he'll take terumah, let's say the wine, and he'll drink it while he has the food stuff in his mouth, and it'll render the wine a shilishi. Therefore, we said, if you eat the bread that's cholin, that is a sheni, it'll make you a sheni, so you'll never come to drink wine of terumah together with it. That's a frequent case. However, it's not so common that when a person is drinking, that he eats. And just think about it. When you're drinking something, so there's liquid in your mouth. You don't put food in your mouth at the time of drinking. Usually you swallow first, and then you put the food in your mouth. So the second gezerah is really not so frequent that we're worried that a guy might have chulin of wine, that's a sheni, in his mouth, and that he might take bread of terumah, put it in his mouth at the same time. It's not so common. Hiddush of the Gemara, even though it's not so common, we still made a gezerah. And we still said, if a person drinks mashkim teme'in, he becomes tameh, in order so he won't come to have mashkim teme'in in his mouth, and then put terumah, and render it tameh because it touched it. So therefore the hadush of the Gemara is, you might have said, now we don't make a gezerah in the second case on mashkim. because it's not so common that a person puts has maskinas with and then puts food. Kamash malan, even though it's not so prevalent, we do make the gezerah nonetheless. So that's basically the first gezerot. To review quickly, we had two shitot. We have the shita of Rabbi Yehoshua and Rabbi Eliezer. Both agree that when you eat something that's a rishon or a sheni, it affects the eater, so that's automatically rabbinic. The only difference is Rabbi Eliezer says it affects the eater according to what he ate. Rishon makes him a rishon, a sheni makes him a sheni, a shlishi makes him a shlishi. However, according to Rabbi Yehoshua, no, rishon makes him a sheni, sheni makes him a sheni, and the same law applies to drinks that are a rishon or a sheni. Rabbi Yehoshua will say it makes him a sheni. And what's the whole reason we did this over here? Gezerah, so the fellow will not have in his mouth terumah and hulin at the same time, in a case where one is tahor and one is tameh, and therefore it'll make the terumah pasul. So the way they did that was they rendered terumah the person, so he'll never come to touch the terumah in that case. So that's the first gezerot. Next gezerah. Ve'habba rosho ve'rubo be'mayim she'ubim. A person, let's say, was a tibul yom. It was tameh. So he went to the mikveh. After he comes out of the mikveh, the gezerah was, if he bathes himself, which is even if he bathes himself now in water, in drawn water. Now drawn water is pasul for mikveh. Drawn water means you took a bucket and you drew the water and you put it in a bathtub. So they made a gezerah. You came out of the mikveh and then you took a bath, or for that matter a shower, you now are a sheni. That's very strange. What do you mean? The guy just came out of the mikveh. Why should it hurt if he takes a shower or a bath after the mikveh? Now, to make him a sheni, meaning if he touches terumah, that'll make terumah a shlishi. So the Gemara says, "My tama gazru be rabbanan tumah." Why did the rabbis make a gezerah tumah in such a case? Amar Rabbi Bai Amar Rav Aseh shebetehila ayu tovlim b'mem me'arot mechunasim usruhin, because originally they used to go to the mikveh in mem me'arot, waters, rainwaters that collected in the caves, mechunasim, they were collected, which is kasher mikveh, but they were siruhin. Siruhin means they were dirty, they were smelly water. Kasher, but just they were smelly. So what did a person do after the dipping? So they used to pour some water on themselves after, like take a shower after, in order to clean themselves from the dirty mikveh water. Hitchilu v'asaum keva. So all of a sudden this turned into a set practice. And anytime somebody would come out of the mikveh, they would take this shower. They would pour the mayim shuvim on them. So the Gemara says, gazru alehem tum'ah. So because of that, they rendered it that if you do this, it makes you tameh. So the Gemara says, oh, let's analyze. My keva. What does it mean that they turned this into a set practice? Amar Abaye shayu omrim, lo elu metaharim, ela elu va'elu metaharim. The people started to say, the mikveh waters alone does not bring tahara. You need both. You need the mikveh waters plus the shower, which means people forgot the original. They forgot the reason why they were showering. Originally, the shower was just to clean themselves. Now people say, no, you have to shower after you come out of the mikveh, and it's you need both, which is just the mikveh plus the shower that brings the person to tahara. So the Gemara says, so what? Amar le Rabba, may nafka mina. What do I care if they think that the shower is bringing the tahara as well? Ha katab le ba'anach. Bottom line, they went to the mikveh. Let them think. Bottom line, as long as they went to the mikveh, what do I care if the people think that it's the shower also in conjunction that does the tahara? So the Gemara says, Ela amar Rava's not. It was worse than that. Shayu omrim lo elu metaharim, ela elu metaharim. They were saying was, it's not the mikveh that does it, it's the shower that does it. And therefore, they were doing away with mikveh and just taking a shower. That's a problem. If they think it's just shower that's doing the mikvah. So what did they say, the rabbis, in order to stop this practice? They said anybody that takes a shower after the mikveh, or for that matter, anybody that sits in a bath with mayim she'uvin, you are a sheni now and you cannot touch terumah. Now, what did that do? Stop them from taking a shower or a bath after the mikveh. And what did that cause them to understand? That it's not the shower or the bath, but it's the mikveh itself that brings tahara. So they had to make that enactment because the people got mixed up and confused. So that's the first enactment regarding mikveh. The second enactment was v'tahor, a fellow that was pure, meaning the last case we discussed was a fellow that was tameh, tibul yom, he went to the mikveh, then after the mikveh he showered. Now we discussed another enactment where the guy was tahor. He wasn't a tibul yom, regular guy. Shenaflu al rosho v'rubo shlusha lugin mayim she'uvin. And they said, if three lugin would be like three quarts. Let's say each log is a quart. Three quarts of mayim she'uvin, water that was drawn, fell on his head. Which means, he took a shower of three lugin of water, where they poured it on him, let's say, he is a sheni. That's a very strict gezerah. He's a regular guy who's tahor. He went, they poured three quarts of water on his head. Oh, you're a sheni now. What did I do? I didn't do anything. No, you took a shower, three lugin of water, you are now a sheni, and therefore if you touch terumah, you'll make it a shenishi. So the Gemara says, "My tama gazu b'rabanan tuma." What's the reason why the rabbis made tuma in such a case? So the Gemara says, "Di lo ha lo kaimaha." Because if you don't make a gezerah here, it undermines the other gezerah. Which means, if you're going to say that if a regular guy takes a shower with three lugin, he's okay. So the people are going to say, what's the difference if I take a shower regularly and I'm okay, than if I come out of the mikveh and take a shower? What's the difference? If I'm okay regularly, then I'm okay when I come out of the mikveh. I don't know, coach again, I'll tell you. So therefore, in order to keep their first enactment alive, they had to make this second enactment where no matter when you take a shower, they had to make a gezerah atu the shower of after the mikveh. Now, I just want to point out that after the mikveh they were more strict, but because they also forbade baths. Which is after the mikveh, they said not only the shower is going to render, if you look at even the lashon of the gezerah, the lashon of the gezerah is v'habar rosho v'rubo b'mayim. After the mikveh, it says, if you just brought your body in water. Because there they said, they osir showers, they osir baths, but in the tahor case, they only were osir the shower. Because that was the more prevalent thing that they did after they came out of the mikveh. So therefore, if a person was a tevul yom, they made him a sheni if he took a shower of she'uvin or a bath of she'uvin. However, if he was tahor, they only made a gezerah on a shower of she'uvin, when they poured it on him, atu the case of when he came out of the mikveh. So those are the two cases regarding mikveh. Next case, v'sefer. Hakamim said, if terumah touches a sefer Torah, the terumah becomes a shinishi. Now that's hard to imagine. A sefer Torah is Kodesh. How could Sefer Torah make terumah a shenishi? That means what they're really saying is they made a Sefer Torah a sheni. So the question is why? Why did the rabbis make tumah on a sefer? Amar Rav Misharshia Shebetechila hayu matzni'in et ochlin de terumah etzel Sefer Torah. Originally, where did the people store their terumah? They used to store it in the hechal. Guy wanted to protect his terumah. Where would he put it? He would put it next to the Sefer Torah in the Hechal. What was their logic? The Amru, Hai Kodesh, the Hai Kodesh. They would say, listen, the Sefer Torah is Kodesh, the terumah is Kodesh. It's befitting to put the food of terumah next to the Sefer. What ended up happening?
כיוון דקעזו דקעתו לידי פסדה, they saw that the ספרי תורה started to get ruined. Why? Because the mice were coming to eat the terumah. Now, when the mice came, they started to also gnaw away at the Sefer Torah. So now the Hachamim had to try to figure out a way to dissuade the people from putting terumah next to the Sefer Torah. So what did they say? Gazru b'Rabbanan Tumah. So they said, fine, if your terumah touches the Sefer Torah, it's pasul. So now the last place people wanted to put their terumah was in the Echal, because they knew that it's going to make it pasul. And therefore the mice did not go into the Echal anymore, and therefore the Sefer Torah were protected. Next case, Vayadayim. The rabbi said, Yadayim, which means Setam Yadayim, a person's hands. Before he makes Netilat Yadayim, they treated his hands as a sheni l'tum'ah, and therefore Setam Yadayim that touched terumah make it a shidishi. So the Gemara says, what's the logic? Because the hands are always moving. They're touching places, they're scratching their head, they're in places that are not clean, and therefore, the way that she understands, less of a tum'ah issue, more of a hygienic issue, meaning a cleansing issue, out of kavod to terumah, they didn't want a person touching terumah with dirty hands, because his hands are all over the place. So therefore, how do they do that? And they could do it one of two ways. They could tell the guy, make sure you're clean. But that's already not such an incentive. So they said, your hands now are a sheni l'tumah. Oh, now already he knows if he touches terumah, it's not just that he touched terumah with dirty hands. No, now he is posel terumah. So therefore, in order that a person will only touch terumah with clean hands, out of kavod to terumah, so they made his hands a sheni l'tumah. Comes Gemara and says, Tana, they have a braita. Af yadayim abaot mahmat sefer posnot et terumah. So he says, we have another gezerah over here, which means above the 18, we have a 19. And what is that? Yadayim, that touched a sefer. We said, yadayim that touches terumah. We talked about a sefer Torah that touches terumah. Now we're saying a new case, a third case. If the yadayim touched a sefer Torah, it'll make the yadayim a sheni, and now render terumah, if you touch it, it'll make it a shenishi. So the Gemara says, what's the logic? If he touches the Sefer Torah, why should it make his hands a sheni? Mishum de Rav Panach, because of Rav Panach's teaching. The Amar Rav Panach, Amar of Yohanan, Ha'oches Sefer Torah Arum, Nikbar Arum. If a person handles a Sefer Torah with bare hands, Arum is bare hands, which means he actually touches the parchment itself. He doesn't use the cloth, let's say, to turn the Sefer Torah or to carry the Sefer Torah. He touches the Sefer bare-handed, Nikbar Arum. He'd be buried barely, buried naked. So the Gemara says, Arum Salkadatach? What does it mean? He's buried naked? Ela Amar of Zera Arum Belo Mitzvot. He'll be buried naked, meaning without mitzvot. As if they strip him from all his mitzvot. Just because he touched the Sefer Torah barehanded. So the Gemara says, Belo mitzvot salkadatach? Is that possible just because a guy touches the Sefer Torah, well, directly? So he should lose all his mitzvot? Ela ema arum belo otam mitzvah. He'd be buried, stripped from that mitzvah that he was doing at the time that he touched the Torah barehanded, meaning, let's say he was learning. And as he was learning from the Torah, he was turning it, rolling it barehanded. That mitzvah is taken away from you. Arum me'otah mitzvah. So let's say he was doing gelilah. He was holding the Sefer Torah up or turning it in order to show it to the Sibur. It's a big mitzvah, gelilah, to roll the Sefer up. Or after he finished, let's say, they're showing it to the Sibur, they roll it up now to put it away. If he touched it barehanded, arum me'otah mitzvah. That mitzvah of gelilah is taken away from him. So you see what the Panach was teaching us. Out of kavod, the Sefer Torah, they didn't want us to touch it barehanded. They wanted us to always touch it with a you know, mitpachat, a cloth. So therefore, in order to dissuade people from touching the Sefer Torah barehanded, they said, if you touch the Sefer Torah barehanded, now your hands are going to become a sheni. And now if you deal with terumah, it's going to make it a shilishi. The only question that the Gemara is going to ask, hold it. What do you need this gezerah for? We just said Yadayim is a sheni regardless. So without touching the Sefer Torah, your hands are a sheni. Even if you don't touch the Sefer Torah, your hands are a sheni. So what is this? So the Gemara says, Hey Gazur Beresha, which one of these two gezerot of the hands did they gozer first? Ilema ha Gazur Beresha. If you're going to tell me that they were gozer stam yadayim first, which means that they said that stam yadayim is sheni. So the Gemara says, kevan de'ag gazur beresha hatu lamali. So then what do you need the second gezerah of Sefer Torah, even before your hands touch the Sefer Torah, they're a sheni. So the Gemara says, e'na'ag gazur beresha. Must be that they've made the gezerah first on Sefer Torah. That only if your hands come in contact with the Sefer Torah, they become a sheni. Ve'adar gazur bekullehu yadayim. And then they made a gezerah on all yadayim. So that was the progression of the gezerot. Started just yadayim that touched the Sefer. And then they said, you know what? Forget about yadayim touching the Sefer. Any yadayim is considered a sheni letumah. To render terumah a shilishi. Now we go to the next case. Utbul yom. What's a tebul yom? Somebody that had to go to the mikveh. So they would go to the mikveh during the day. But they would have to wait until sunset in order to become fully tahor. So it says, in that window between the mikveh and sunset, if they touch terumah, they would make terumah a shilishi. Now, these are all rabbinical enactments. So the Gemara wants to understand now the case of Tevul Yom. So the Gemara says, Utvul Yom, Tevul Yom, De'oraitahu. What are you talking about? Tevul Yom is not rabbinical. Tevul Yom is De'oraita Dichtiv, Uba Shemesh, V'ta'er. Which means, it's clear from the Torah, as Rashi quotes the Pesukim, that a Tevul Yom, even after he goes to the mikveh, he has the ability to mitameh things. Torah says if he touched something that was terumah, he can render it pasul, to befilush pasuk. So therefore, what are you telling me? Bet Hillel and Bet Shammai made a rabbinical enactment regarding a tevul yom. Tevul yom is deoraita. That's not a rabbinical enactment. So the Gemara says, you're right. Sameh mikan tevul yom. Scratch tevul yom off the 18 enactments, which means, agreed, if a tevul yom touches terumah, it'll make it pasul, but it's not one of the 18, so we're going to have to, you know, fill in for the tevul yom case. It's true indeed, but it's not the Rabbanan. Next case, Ve'aochlin shenitme'u b'mashkin. These are the last two cases of the enactments, of the 10 enactments that we learned in the Mishnah. Food that became tameh through liquids. Finalize again. You have food, chulin, food, that got tameh through a liquid, and now the food is tameh. If that touches terumah, it could make it a shilishi. That's one case. So the Gemara says, "B'mashkin demai." We want to know the details of the case. What type of mashkin made the foodstuff tameh? Give me the scenario. So the Gemara says, "Ilema b'mashkin abain mahmat sheretz." Maybe the mashkin we're talking about over here became tameh through a sheretz. A sheretz is one of the rodents that the Torah says after they die, they become tameh. What's the level of sheretz? Sheretz is avatumah. So let's work it out. The sheretz is avatumah. It touched mashkin. It'll make the mashkin a rishon. This mashkin then touched food. So it'll make the food A, Sheni. Now that food touches Terumah, makes it A, Shelishi. The Gemara says, Deoraita Ninu. That's not rabbinical. That's a Deoraita. That's Beferush Torah stuff. Which is the Torah tells you, an Abatum Av Sheretz can metameh something to make it a Rishon, which can make Ochlinu Mashkin A, Shini. That can make Terumah Shini. That's not a, you don't need a rabbinical enactment for that. And the Gemara says, Dichtiv. We have Pesukim for this. It says, Vechol Mashkeh Asher Yishateh. Which means the Gemara quotes Pisukim to show us that a sheretz, let's say, touches a vessel. Let's say it touches a keli, so the vessel becomes tameh, and whatever is inside the vessel that the sheretz did not touch can also become tameh. Which means, let's say, the vessel becomes a rishon, and the food inside of it will become a sheni. So the Gemara makes a kavahomer. The Gemara says, if a sheretz can metameh a vessel, which then can metameh the stuff that's inside, all the more so if the sheretz touches the food itself, or the meshkin itself, it'll make it a rishon, to make a sheni, to make a shelizhi. So therefore, that case of Mashkin that will metameh ochlin is deoraita. So the Gemara says, Ela b'mashkin habain mahmat yadayim. Oh, Yonari's mashkin became tameh through his hands. Oh, now we know hands is already rabbinical. Hands are a sheni, that's already midrabanan. So what happened? His hands that were a sheni went and touched mashkin. Now we have a rule. Normally what should happen is if the hands are a sheni, he touches mashkin, nothing should happen. Because a sheni can only make a shilishi by terumah. But by touching these mashkin, even if you want to say a tumah should go on it, at worst it should be even a sheni. But we have a rule by mashkin. By mashkin, it goes backwards. And therefore, when his yadayim touch the mashkin become a rishon. Midrabanan. We'll see why. Once these mashkin become a rishon, now these mashkin touch food stuff, made it a sheni. That food stuff touched terumah, made it a shirishi. That's the rabbinical enactment. Again, food that became tameh from mashkin. What type of mashkin? Mashkin that became tameh from yadayim. And that yadayim makes the mashkin a rishon, that makes the food a sheni, that makes the rumah a shirishi. Now, what's the logic why we should make such a gezerah? So the Gemara says, v'gezerah mishum mashkin habaim mahmat sheretz. Meaning, let's say a sheretz, which is avatumah, touched mashkin. The mashkin become a rishon. Which is, we have a case from the Torah that mashkin can become a rishon. Where they came in contact with a sheretz. So since we have a biblical case that mashkin can become a rishon by a case of sheretz, so the rabbis now, since we have a precedence in the Torah like that, said mashkin, when they come in contact with even a sheni, will be a rishon. Like the case of the Torah, because we have one case in the Torah that mashkin becomes a rishon from the contact of a sheretz. So therefore the rabbi's gezerah was based on, you know, a case of the Torah. So therefore, in order, so people will be aware, so the rabbis made a gezerah. Maybe if we have to be strict with mashkin, because mashkin can become a rishon in the sense of if we got tameh from a sheretz. So the rabbi says, you know what? All mashkin, whenever you make touch it, we're going to give it the strictest case of the Torah, rabbinically of course, and treat it as a rishon. Because you do have a case like that. So they were strict. Oh, so now we get to the last case. Case number 10. Vakelim shenitme'u bimashkin. The last case was, you have kelim, vessels, that became tameh from, again, liquids. So the mashkin touched the liquid, the mashkin touched the keli touched the tiruma, and rendered the tiruma a shirishi. Yeah, it's mashkin to the keli to the tiruma. So now we want to understand, it's got to be a rabbinical case. So what's the case?
Kelim de itme'u b'mashkin demay.
The kelim that you're saying became tameh from mashkin, how did those mashkin become tameh? So the Gemara says, ilema b'mashkin dezav. Maybe you'll tell me that the mashkin we're talking about over here is the mashkin of a zav. A zav is a man that had tum'ah come out of him. A zav is tameh from the Torah. The Torah tells us not only is he tameh, but his spit, his rock, or his meraglaim, his urine, those also can project tum'ah, ad ha-tum'ah. Meaning, if a person is talking to a zav, and as he's talking to him, he spits on him, that is like ad ha-tum'ah coming on the person, and that can make the person a rishon. Wow. That's the strictness of a zav. It's the strictness of zav. We don't find this humrah anywhere else, except by a zav that his rok and his meraglayim have the ability to metameh. So the Gemara says, oh, maybe that's the mashkin we're talking about over here. Maybe the rok of the zav touched the keli, made the keli a rishon, and now that keli touched terumah, and can make terumah even a sheni, and then even a shirishi. So the Gemara says, hold it. Idim abe mashkin dezav deoraita ninu. That's deoraita, that's not rabbinical. The rok of a zav is a straight out loshen emah dechtiv. V'chi yarok hazav betahor. It's clear, it says, if the zav spits on somebody tahor, he renders him tameh. Not only on the person, but it says even his begadim. His rok can be metameh, begadim. Therefore, kelim. And also, the Gemara says another deen, mash biyad tahor timeti lecha. Not only that, but let's say the rock didn't touch the person. Let's say he was holding something, and it landed on that item. Let's say he was holding a keli, and the rock landed on that item. Now it comes out the receiver of the rock is carrying rock. Just by carrying rock, even without actual contact, it has the ability to metameh. Now, as she says, the Gemara didn't have to tell us this case over here now. It's not nogeya tawa sugya, carrying zav. For us, it's enough to say that the keli, the rock, actually the saliva of the zav, touched the keli, he spat on the keli, that keli is tameh midoraita. Now, when it comes to contact with terumah, that's deoraita. So what's the case? So the Gemara says, Ela b'mashkin abaim mahmat sheretz. We're talking about over here, mashkin, that became tameh through a sheretz. Now, let's analyze the case. Sheretz, we said, is avatumah. Now what's going to happen over here? The sheretz touched the mashkin. The mashkin hence become a rishon. Now let's analyze, Rabotai. A rishon does not have the ability to be metameh kelim. From the Torah, a rishon can only metameh ochlin u'mashkin. Let's review again. According to the Torah law, things on the rishon level can only affect ochlin u'mashkin. So therefore, let's analyze again. A sheretz, Torah, no question, anatumah, touched mashkin. It's tameh, the mashkin is tameh, rishon from the Torah. From Torah law, what can that rishon now do? It can only affect food. But now we're discussing a case where that rishon, mashkin, touched a keli. From the Torah, it shouldn't affect the keli. But the rabbis came along and said, it's going to affect it with Rabbanan to make it a sheni, in order to render terumah a shilishi. Now why did they make a gezerah in this case? because the Gemara says vegizera mishum mashkin dezav, because we found one case that mashkin is considered avatumah, which can have an effect on kelim. What's the one case that mashkin is an avatumah? The rok of a zav. So there is a case that mashkin can affect kelim. Again, if a zav spat on kelim, minat Torah, those kelim are tameim, because an avatumah can metame kelim. So since we have a case from the Torah that an avatumah can make kelim tameim, we'll make it a rishon. The avatumah would be the rok of the zav. He spits on the kelim become a rishon. Avatumah minat Torah can metame kelim. So therefore, the Hakamim said that we're going to make a gezerah atu roko shel zav, that even if these mashkim, let's say, became tameh from a sheretz, which makes the mashkim now only a rishon, we're going to still say this rishon can have an effect on the keli, because we don't want to confuse it with the case where rok minat Torah has an effect on the keli. So they made a case where midrabanan, this mashkin that got affected by a sheretz, which is now only a rishon, which really cannot only metameh foodstuff, will say that it's metameh the keli as well, in order to render terumah pasul. So bottom line, the Gemara explained the logic of the 10 gezerot. Now comes the Gemara and says, v'yadayim talmidei shamay v'hilel gazur. Now we go back to the yadayim one. He said, Setam Yadayim. He said, the hands, Hakamim put a sheni on it. And who made this Gezerah? We said, the students of Shammai and the students of Hillel. Actually, just to get the history over here, we said that they argued. This was an argument. Hillel said, it's okay, the students. And the students of Shammai said, it's a sheni. And since there were more students of Shammai at the meeting than the students of Hillel, so the majority ruled, like Shammai, to say that the Stam Yadayim is going to be considered a sheni. So the Gemara says, "Ve'yadayim talmidei Shammai ve'Hillel gazur." Shammai ve'Hillel gazur. The rabbis themselves, Shammai and Hillel, made that gezerah of Yadayim. It wasn't their students; it was the Hakamim themselves. How do you know? Detanya, we have a braita. Yosef ben Yo'ezer ish Sereda, Yosef ben Yohanan ish Yerushalayim. Those two rabbis, gazru tum'ah al eres ha'amim. Those two rabbis made a gezerah on the nations of the goyim. Meaning, since the nations of the goyim, they're not careful on their burial, because they bury people anywhere, so there's bodies all over the place. So therefore, they made a gezerah. Anybody that visits outside of Eretz Yisrael is automatically tameh. But he comes back, we have to purify him. Why? Because we assume that he came in contact with some dead body on the road, buried in the middle of the street, etc. And the goyim can emanate a tumah, whether it's in an oil, whether it's touching. So they made a gezerah. Even if you say, no, I didn't come in contact with a mit. You went to Chutz La'aretz, finished. You are tameh. That was the first enactment of Yosef ben Yo'ezer and Yosef ben Yohanan, that Eretz Ha'amim, the lands of the world, has tumah. Ba'al kli zechuchit. And they also made a gezerah on glass. The Torah doesn't talk about glass becoming tameh. It talks about metals. Metal kelim. Does not say glass. So they came and made a gezerah that what? Glass also is subject to the laws of tumah. Shimon ben Shattach tiken ketubah le'isha. Shimon ben Shattach made a takana regarding ketubah for a lady. Now what is ketubah? Ketubah is in the case of, let's say, where the husband gets divorced or he dies, so a certain amount of money will go to the lady. Now, the olden days, the way the ketubah was, they would designate the exact money, which means, let's say they would put the $500 on the side, they would put it in an envelope, they say, listen, in the case we get divorced, you get that envelope. So it was very easy to get divorced, because you had the money earmarked already. He finishes there. All you got to do is, you just account. Take this money right in, get out of here. So the Shimon ben Shattach saw that it was leading to people getting angry at their wives, they were getting divorced very easily. So he came along and said, no. Now if a person wants to get divorced, all the person's property has a lien on it for the ketubah. And the lady can take the ketubah from any of the property that she wants. So now it becomes much more difficult. Now ready to pay the ketubah, she's going to say, you know, I want it from this field over there. Now he has to go, you know, size up the field and get an appraisal and sell it. And when it was on a clear item, he said, listen, he took a watch, he put it on the side. You get the vault, you get the watch. Finish, easy. Next. Then they don't got to start now appraising his whole estate. He came along and said, no, in order to make it more difficult for a guy to divorce his wife, he put a lien on the old guy's property where she can take ketubah for whoever she wants. So that was his takana for ketubah. Vegazar tum'ah al kli matechot, and he also made a gezerah of tum'ah for metal. Now the Gemara will explain. Really, the tum'ah of metal vessels is written in the Torah. So the Gemara will explain what exactly his gezerah on metal was for tum'ah. Now we get to our point. Shamay vehilel gazru tum'ah al hayadayim. But you see, Shamay and Hillel, they were the ones that made the enactment of the tum'ah of the yadayim. So what are you telling me was their students? It was the rabbis themselves. Oh, v'chi tema, because maybe you'll tell me, Shamai v'siyato, v'hilel v'siyato. So maybe you'll tell me, this is a braita, by the way. All this story of Hillel and Shamai making the enactment of the Yadayim is a braita. Mm-hmm. So maybe you'll tell me that it doesn't mean Hillel and Shamai alone, it means Hillel and their students. And Shammai and their students. Therefore, there's no contradiction between our Mishnah and this braita. It was Hillel and his students. They were all there. There was 18 things that they enacted that day. And Hillel and Shammai argued on all 18. And if that's the case, we know Hillel and Shammai were not there. Why? Because we know that the rabbis, Hillel and Shammai, they themselves only argued in three places. So therefore, it can't be that Hillel and Shammai were there at the enactments. Because that would mean that they argued really on 18 things. And we know they only argued on three things. So the Gemara says, V'chi tema, maybe you'll say it happened like this. Atu inu gazur litlot. Maybe Hillel and Shammai came along originally, at first, and they said, you know what? Regarding Yadayim, if the Yadayim touch Terumah, since it's rabbinical, this Tum'ah, we're not going to allow you to burn the Terumah as a result. Because normally Terumah that becomes Tameh, you burn it. But they came along and said, you know what? Don't burn it. Tone it. Just let it sit in abeyance until it rots. That was the first enactment of Hillel and Shammai. That's the Braita. She's when the Braita says Hillel and Shammai were gozer on Yadayim, they meant that if they touch Terumah, you just let the Terumah sit. You tole. Now, the Atu Talmidayu, and then the students came along, Vegazru Lisrof. And then the students came along and argued it out, and the students of Shammai won, and they came out and said, "Burn it." So therefore, there was two levels of the history here, which means there was an original enactment of the rabbis themselves, Hillel and Shammai, litlot, and then the students came along and battled it out later, and Shammai prevailed. Not only do you tole the terumah, but you actually burn such terumah. Oh, so that answers the question, the two stages. Gemara says, can't be. Ve'amar Ilfa taught, Yadayim tehilat gezeratan nesrefa. The original enactment of Yadayim was to burn the terumah. There was no level of litlot first, then serefa. It started off serefa. So again, the question is, how do we reconcile, was it the students of Hillel and Shammai, or was it Hillel and Shammai themselves? So the Gemara concludes and says, Ela, Atu Inhu, Hillel and Shammai came along, Gazur, they made a Gezerah, Yadayim is a Sheni, and if it touches Terumah, you burn the Terumah. That was their enactment. Velo Kiblu Minayu, but it wasn't accepted. Klal Yisrael did not accept the gezerah, which means when the rabbis make gezerot, for the gezerah to be active, it has to be accepted by Klal Yisrael. But if it's a very difficult gezerah, that Klal Yisrael does not accept, and the gezerah does not have widespread acceptance, so the gezerah is not considered legal, does not holding. So the rabbis originally said, we want to make a gezerah, anybody's hands are a sheni, and those sheni hands touch teruma, it's a sheni, and you burn it. What happened? Klal Yisrael didn't accept it. So what happened? So the students came along, gazru v'kiblu minayu. The students then came along at a later date and argued this out, and they came along and Shammai ruled, Tameh, your hands are sheni, and if you touch teruma, it's a sheni, and you burn it, and their enactment was accepted. Now, I have to point out that according to this Gemara, it comes out a tremendous chidush, because originally the history was Hillel and Shammai agreed. Yadayim are sheni, and you burn teruma. Hillel agreed to this. Later on in the history, the gezerah was not accepted. Now the students of Shammai and Hillel argued. Now what were they arguing? That means Shammai was saying, you burn the teruma, and the students of Hillel were saying, you don't burn. That means the students of Hillel were arguing on Hillel. Because in the original enactment, Hillel and Shammai agreed to burn it. So the Mefashim all asked, the Rashash asked, how do you explain that the students can argue on their rabbi? So the answer that they give is very good. They say that you see from here that so long as the gezerah was not accepted, so therefore it's not considered arguing. Which means if they made a takana and it was accepted by Klal Yisrael, the student cannot argue with the rabbi. But once already the takana they made was not accepted in Klal Yisrael, so nothing happened. So therefore they can review it and give their own opinion. So let's just review the history. Hillel and Shammai came along in agreement and said, Yadayim is sheni, and what?
Burned
the teruma. Was not accepted. Then their students came along, argued it out. Shammai had more majority, and therefore they ruled Yadayim is sheni to burn teruma. Now Gemara has one more point. Ve'akatesh Shlomo gazar. Says forget about Hillel and Shammai. This enactment of Yadayim preceded all of them. Shlomo HaMelech made the gezerah on Yadayim. How do you know? The Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel. He made the law of Erubin, meaning Erub Hasenot, that people that are living in a courtyard, even though it's a Rishut HaYachid, but since it's a common Rishut that's shared by others, you need to make an Eruv amongst all the inhabitants. And he also made the Takana of Netilat Shadayim, Yatzta, Batkol, Ve'amra. A heavenly voice came out in approval to what Shlomo did and said, "Beni im hakam de becha yismach li bigamani." God, as if we're saying, "I am happy that you're making the gezerot." Hakam beni, my son is wise. Vesamach li bi, and I am happy. Vashiba chodefi davar. So the question then is, Shlomo made already the takana of netilat yadayim. So how could you tell me it was Hillel and Shammai or the students? So the Gemara says, "Atash Shlomo gazar lekadashim." Shlomo's chiddush was you have to make netilat yadayim if you want to come in contact with korbanot. However, va'atu inu v'gazur af netruma. Hillel and Shammai came along and said, not only do you need netilat yadayim for kodashim, but they said you even need netilat yadayim for teruma. So it comes out, it started with Shlomo with kodashim. Hillel and Shammai added it to teruma, but it wasn't accepted. And then Talmidei Hillel and Shammai argued it out, and it was accepted by teruma, like the rule of Shammai, to burn teruma if the stam yadayim touched it. Baruch Adonai Olam. Amen.